Hey everyone, have you ever imagined like opening a letter from like almost 2,000 years ago? That's what we're doing today. But it's not just any old letter. This is from Peter, one of Jesus' closest followers. It's called 1 Peter. But here's the thing. It wasn't just to one person. It was meant for a whole bunch of early Christians spread all over the Roman Empire.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about the impact of a letter like that reaching, a global community, especially people facing a world that didn't really get them.
And that's what's so interesting about this deep dive, because it wasn't easy street for these early Christians. They were dealing with pressure, even hostility, just because of what they believed.
Yeah, it's true. First Peter is a real guide to holding on to faith when things get tough. We can learn a lot from how those early Christians dealt with their problems.
Absolutely. And to help us unpack all this, we've got Dr. Dave Matthewson, a New Testament scholar, who's going to connect your First Peter to some other really interesting parts of the Bible. Before we dive into the letter itself, can you paint us a picture of where these early Christians were living and the specific challenges they were up against?
Sure. 1 Peter was written to Christians living in five Roman provinces: Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. That's modern-day Turkey. So imagine a huge area where your beliefs make you different, maybe even a bit of an outsider. These Christians weren't facing like a giant organized persecution from the Roman Empire. Instead, it was more about the everyday pressures of living in a place where their faith made them stand out.
So it's less about dramatic empire-wide persecution and more about just the daily social challenges of being different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, think about trying to live out your faith when everyone around you sees it as strange or even dangerous. That's the kind of situation these early Christians were dealing with.
And Peter himself was writing this letter from Rome, but he used this name Babylon. Why do you think he chose that name?
That's a cool detail. It adds a whole other meaning to the letter. By the time 1 Peter was written, Babylon had become a symbolic way to talk about Rome.
It sounds like it was more than just a random nickname, though.
Right. To understand why Peter used Babylon, you got to think back to the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, the Babylonian Empire was known for oppressing God's people. So when he called Rome Babylon, Peter was comparing the two. It was a subtle but strong way of saying, hey, we're facing a similar challenge here. We're a minority group living in a powerful empire that doesn't share our beliefs.
That's a really interesting point. So he's connecting their experience to this much bigger historical narrative. Given all the pressure they faced, it's not a surprise that suffering is a big theme in 1 Peter.
The idea of suffering pops up tons of times throughout the letter. It's actually statistically significant compared to other writings from that time.
So it's not just a side note, it's front and center. But what's Peter's take on suffering? Is he just saying, tough luck, get over it?
No, not at all. He's not just telling them to grin and bear it. He's giving them a roadmap for how to live faithfully, even when the world feels like it's against you.
Okay, so let's unpack this roadmap. What's his strategy for dealing with suffering?
Well, it's got two main parts. The first part, chapters 1 through 3, he talks about holy conduct. He wants Christians to build this holy community to help them stand up to the pressure they're facing.
So how you live actually makes a difference. When you're going through tough times, it's not just about enduring it, it's about how you endure it.
You got it. And he uses this powerful metaphor of Christians being living stones being built into a spiritual house. He's saying that the community of believers, the church itself, becomes like this holy temple where God lives.
So instead of a building made of bricks, it's the community itself that's the sacred space. It's a beautiful image.
Yeah, it really is. And it's super relevant even today. It reminds us that being part of a supportive community, one that shares our beliefs, can help us face problems and stay true to who we are.
It makes me think about how important it is to find your people, especially when it comes to faith being around others who understand and support you.
Yeah, totally. It's about finding those people who can walk beside you on your journey, people who can lift you up and give you strength when you need it most.
So that's the first part. Holy conduct, building a strong community. What's the second part?
In chapters 4 and 5, Peter focuses on perseverance. He's pushing his readers to stand strong in their faith even when they're facing persecution.
Perseverance sounds great, but when you're in the middle of a hard time, it can be really tough to actually do it. Does Peter give any real advice on how to actually persevere?
He does. He stresses one super important thing. Don't fight back against the people who are persecuting you. He wants them to follow Jesus's example, who suffered without retaliating. Peter even compares the early Christians to Noah from the Old Testament.
Noah's Ark, what's the connection there?
Think about Noah's story. He and his family were different from everyone else facing a world that didn't get them. They were made fun of and ridiculed for building that ark, but they stayed true to God And in the end, God saved them. It's a powerful reminder that even when things look really bad, when you feel alone and like no one gets you, God is there. He can get you through the storm.
It's a really encouraging thought, especially when you're facing your own personal storms. It reminds us that faith can be this incredible source of strength and resilience.
Yeah.
Now, there's this passage in 1 Peter that's always really intrigued me and honestly kind of puzzled me too.
Oh, yeah.
It's in chapter 3, verses 18 through 20. It's about Jesus going down to the spirits in prison. Can you help us understand this mysterious passage? What's happening there?
Oh, yeah, that one, that part's sparked a lot of debate over the years. It's one of those parts of the Bible that makes you really think traditionally people have understood it as Jesus going down to hell between his death and resurrection.
So the traditional view is that he went to hell to offer a second chance at salvation to those who died before him, or to proclaim his victory over death to the spirits trapped there.
That's it. But there's another, maybe even more interesting possibility. The passage itself doesn't actually say that Jesus went down anywhere. It just says he went to the spirits in prison and preached to them, what if this prison isn't a real place, but like a spiritual one?
Okay, so you're saying maybe it's not a literal hell, but some kind of spiritual realm where these spirits are held captive.
Exactly. And if we look closely at how Peter describes it, there's a fascinating connection to the Old Testament, Genesis chapter 6.
Oh, is this another tie-in to the Noah story?
It's related. It's the part right before the flood. The story of the sons of God who get involved with human women. And Jewish tradition often interprets these sons of God as fallen angels or demonic beings.
Okay, I see where you're going with this. These fallen angels get imprisoned for their rebellion and Jesus goes to them.
To confront them, to announce his victory over them. Remember Peter's writing to Christians facing a hostile world? They're feeling the pressure, the opposition. What better way to encourage them than to remind them that Jesus has triumphed over every evil power, even those in the spiritual realm?
Yeah. Wow. That's a powerful interpretation. So you're suggesting that Jesus isn't offering a second chance or preaching to the damned, but going head to head with the forces of darkness and declaring his ultimate victory over them.
It's a message of hope and power for Christians facing their own battles. It's about reminding them they're not alone in their struggle. Mm-hmm. There's this much bigger spiritual war going on, and in the end, good beats evil.
I love how that interpretation brings a whole new dimension to that passage. It's not just about what happened back then. It's about what it means for us today, how it can give us hope and strength in our own lives.
Absolutely.
We've covered so much already. We've explored the setting of 1 Peter, the challenges those early Christians faced, and the two key parts of Peter's strategy for dealing with suffering, holy conduct, and perseverance. We even took a deep dive into that mysterious passage about Jesus and the spirits in prison. Now, before we go any further, I want to hear what you think. Peter uses a lot of Old Testament imagery in his letter, like comparing the Christians to Noah and calling Rome Babylon. Why do you think he does that? What's the significance of those connections?
I think Peter's being really clever with those Old Testament references. Remember, those early Christians were mostly Jewish converts. They already knew those stories inside and out, and those stories meant a lot to them.
So by using these familiar images and stories, he's tapping into something that would really resonate with them.
Exactly. He's connecting what those early Christians were going through to this much bigger story, you know, the ongoing story of God's faithfulness all through history. It's like he's saying, look, you're not alone. God has been faithful to his people in the past, and he'll be faithful to you now.
Like giving them this sense of historical context, a reminder that they're part of something much bigger than themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And by using all the rich symbolism of the Old Testament, Peter's adding even more meaning and depth to his message. He's showing how these old stories are still relevant, still powerful for people facing challenges in their own time.
You know, we talked before about that idea of holy conduct and the church being this spiritual house built of living stones. It's such a powerful image. But I'd love to hear more about what it means practically. What's Peter trying to say with that metaphor?
Well, in the Old Testament, the temple was the actual place where God lived, a symbol of his presence with his people. But with Jesus, that whole idea is changing. Peter, along with other New Testament writers, is saying that God's true dwelling place isn't a building made of stone anymore. It's the community of believers, the church itself.
So instead of bricks and mortar, it's us, the followers of Jesus, who become the living stones that make up this spiritual house. That's a pretty big shift in how you look at things.
It is, and it changes how we understand the church and what we're supposed to do in it. It means each of us as believers has a crucial role to play in building up this spiritual temple. We're all connected, we support each other, and together we become this place where God's Spirit can live.
So it's not just about being holy on your own, it's about adding to the holiness of the whole community.
Exactly. Remember, Peter's writing to these Christians who are spread out, facing hostility and pressure to fit in with the culture around them. So by emphasizing this idea of the church as a holy temple, he's giving them this feeling of belonging, a place where they can find support and encouragement.
Like a fortress, a safe haven in a dangerous world.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And remember that image of living stones. Peter's reminding them that they're not just random people scattered about. They're being carefully chosen and put together by God himself to make something beautiful and lasting.
It makes you appreciate how important it is to find that church community, that place where you can connect with other believers and support each other as you go through life following Jesus.
I agree. It's in community that we can really live out those values of love, compassion, and perseverance that Peter keeps talking about. We've spent a lot of time talking about the tough stuff those early Christians were dealing with, but let's not forget the hope that's woven through 1 Peter. He's constantly reminding his readers that their suffering isn't pointless.
Yeah, even with all the talk about hardship and persecution, there's this undercurrent of joy and anticipation. Where does that come from?
It comes from that unshakable truth that Jesus rose from the dead. Peter reminds his readers that their Savior Jesus has already beaten death and defeated evil.
So it doesn't matter what they go through in this life, they can be sure of their ultimate victory.
Exactly. And that's where that comparison to Noah comes back in. Just like God saved Noah and his family from the flood, he'll also save his people through all the troubles and trials in this world.
It's like a powerful reminder that even in the darkest times, faith can give us hope and make us strong.
Absolutely. And Peter doesn't just make vague promises. He gives very specific instructions on how to put that faith into action in everyday life.
So what are some of his practical tips for staying strong in your faith?
Well, we already touched on the importance of holy conduct and perseverance. But he also talks a lot about being humble, submitting to authority, and loving each other.
So even when they're being persecuted, Christians are still called to live out those values.
Yeah, it's a radical idea. Even today, it's easy to get bitter or resentful when people mistreat us, but Peter calls us to something higher.
It's definitely a challenge, but it's also incredibly inspiring. It reminds us that faith isn't just about believing certain things. It's about putting them into action, even when it's hard.
Exactly.
Now, I'm curious about something. We talked about how Peter used Babylon as this code word for Rome, but he also uses other Old Testament imagery, like comparing Christians to Noah and describing the church as a spiritual house.
Yeah.
Why do you think he does that?
It's a really smart strategy. He uses those familiar stories and images to connect what those early Christians were going through to the bigger picture of God's faithfulness all throughout history. It's like he's showing them that they're not alone in their struggle, that they're part of something much bigger, a story that has a happy ending.
So it's about giving them this sense of belonging to something that goes beyond their own time and place.
That's it. And by tapping into all that rich symbolism in the Old Testament, he's adding layers of meaning and depth to what he's trying to say.
I love that. It's like he's taking those ancient stories and breathing new life into them, showing how they're still relevant and powerful. Today, we talked about how important community is in 1 Peter, but these Christians were scattered over this huge area. How do they stay connected and support each other? Did they have like an early Christian internet or something?
Well, no internet back then, unfortunately, but they had something just as powerful, shared stories, rituals, and beliefs. Remember, the early Christians moved around a lot. They traveled for business to find work, and sometimes to escape persecution as they moved, they took their faith with them, sharing it with others and starting new communities.
So like a network of house churches spreading the message of Jesus.
Exactly. And they had ways of keeping in touch. They'd send letters like the one we're talking about and pass along stories and teachings by word of mouth.
It makes you realize how tough and adaptable that early church was. No internet, no fancy buildings. But they still managed to spread the gospel and build this thriving community.
It really shows how strong their faith was and how committed they were to sharing it with others.
So what does all of this mean for us today? We're not facing persecution like those early Christians, but we still have our own challenges, our own struggles.
Yeah.
How can we use the message of 1 Peter in our own lives?
That's the big question, isn't it? I think there are a few key takeaways from 1 Peter that are just as true today as they were 2,000 years ago. First, remember how important holy conduct is. How we live our lives makes a difference. What we do speaks louder than words, especially in a world where people are often skeptical about faith.
So it's about being a good example, actually living out your values in a real and consistent way.
Yeah, exactly. Second, find your people, surround yourself with people who share your faith and can support you on your journey.
Community is key.
It really is. And third, never underestimate the power of perseverance. Life can be tough, but remember that your faith can give you strength and help you bounce back. Don't give up, even when things get hard.
It's like that old saying, this too shall pass. But with faith, we know that something even better is coming.
Exactly. And lastly, remember that you're not suffering for nothing. God is with you, and He will use even those really tough times for good.
It's this message of hope that can help us through even the darkest times.
You know, one thing that strikes me about 1 Peter is how practical it is. Peter doesn't just talk about fancy theological ideas. He gives really specific advice on how to live out your faith every single day.
Yeah, it's like a spiritual handbook for dealing with a tough world. What are some of the practical pieces of advice that really stand out to you?
Yeah, it does feel very grounded, even though it was written so long ago. So what kind of specific advice does he give?
Right, yeah. What are some of those things he says to do?
Well, we talked about holy conduct, but Peter gets down to brass tacks about what that actually looks like.
Mm-hmm.
He says things like, honor everyone, love your fellow Christians, fear God, and honor the emperor.
Oh, that's interesting that he talks about honoring the emperor.
Mm.
These early Christians were getting pushback from the Roman authorities, but Peter's saying, respect the government, be good citizens.
Yeah, and that might seem kind of weird given everything that was going on, but remember, Peter's main goal is to encourage these people to live a life that shows Christ's love and character, even when it's tough.
So even when they're being treated badly, they're supposed to show grace and respect.
Right. That's a really powerful message, especially nowadays when it's so easy to get caught up in anger and division.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that we're called to be different, to be set apart, not by judging others or being all preachy, but by actually showing love and compassion.
You said it, another practical thing Peter talks about is how to handle suffering. He says, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you.
Give your worries to God because he's got your back. That's comforting, especially when you feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's not about pretending suffering isn't real or that it doesn't hurt. It's about knowing we don't have to carry that weight all by ourselves. God is there for us to comfort us and give us strength.
Like having a divine safety net. You know, no matter what happens, we're not going to fall through the cracks.
That's it. And having that kind of trust can be really freeing. It helps us face those challenges with courage and hope, knowing we're not alone.
Well, as we wrap up this deep dive into 1 Peter, what would you say is the biggest takeaway for our listeners?
I think the main message is one of hope, resilience, and unwavering faith. Peter reminds us that even when we face suffering and opposition, even when the world doesn't understand us, we can stand strong in what we believe. We can live out our values knowing that God is with us every step of the way.
And that message is just as powerful today as it was 2,000 years ago. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your insights.
It's been great.
And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into 1 Peter. We hope you've gained some new insights from this ancient letter and that it's inspired you to live out your faith with courage and conviction, even when things get rough. Remember, like Peter says, you're not alone. You're a living stone being built into a spiritual house, a holy temple that's worth celebrating, even in the midst of hardship as you go about your week. Think about this. What specific things can you do inspired by 1 Peter to build a stronger sense of community and stand by your values when you're under pressure? Until next time, keep seeking, keep exploring, and keep the faith.